Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Well, today's show is certainly going to be eclectic because we're going to be talking about the Syrian Kurds. Are they the key to obliterating ISIS? Should there be some type of possible alliance between the Kurds, Israel, the United States, and anybody else who wants to go in and fight ISIS? We're going to be talking with a Syrian Kurd today, and he's going to be giving us his take on the situation. We're going to be learning a lot from him. We're also going to be getting a live report from the AIPAC convention, and we're going to be speaking with Lenny Solomon, the leader, the founder of Schlockrock, one of my favorite music groups, which takes very popular songs and puts Jewish humorous lyrics to it. It's funny. I had my kids growing up with it. It's just amazing. He's going to be on the show today as well, talking about a new project that he's doing. But the most important question of the day of the show is, if you've seen the video that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made for the AIPAC convention, and it played this afternoon Israel time, I guess it was morning time in the United States where it played, you can see that he looks different. So the big question is, did he dye? Did he dye his hair? I think that BB dyed his hair. He looks younger. We're going to ask that question as well. Go take a look at it. I'm going to post it on my Facebook page, on my public page for Tamar Yonah. Go look for that video. Take a look and see for yourself if you think that our prime minister dyed his hair. I just think it's kind of funny. He does look younger. He does. Okay, so all that's coming up in the show. I want to remind you that this is a live show. If you're listening between 8 to 9 p.m. Holy Time right here in the land of Israel, or if it's between 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States, that means that we are live. You can call into the show with any comments or questions. And most importantly, join me in the chat room. It is the orange button on our website, or if you're listening through the player, the orange bar going across the page. And I'd love to see you there. You can write in your comments and your questions. If I have time, I will read them out during the show. All right, so all that's coming up. It's going to be a very interesting show. So many different topics. And, I have to go now to my Facebook page and post that video for you. So we'll be right back, everybody. Remember, you can call it.
Hey, it's Ari Fulvet, Israel News Talk Radio. If you, like me, are sick and tired, if you've had enough of listening to all the anti-Israel lies and propaganda that's being spread online and offline, in the press, in the newspapers, on TV channels, in the newsrooms across the world, tune in to my weekly show, Bulletproof, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. as we discover, expose, and completely destroy all anti-Israel lies and propaganda. And we're going to do it with just the truth. As an active IDF reserve soldier, an elite paratroopers unit, I will try to give you an inside look to the opinions of the men and women of the IDF on the situation. Bulletproof will give you the tools. More importantly, will give you the weapons to take down all anti-Israel activists, no matter where you meet them. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. Israel time to Bulletproof on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
All right, so the question is, what is happening in Syria, and how can the Kurds possibly be the key to obliterating ISIS? And should Syria, or at least part of Syria, be turned into a new Kurdistan? We're going to be talking now with Dr. Sherko Abbas. He is the president of the Kurdistan National Assembly of Syria, which is an umbrella organization representing the Syrian Kurds. And he's here to talk about what's happening in Syria and the Kurdish fight there, as well as a possible Kurdish-Israel-U.S. alliance. All right, so welcome to the show, Dr. Abbas.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for coming on. So can you first start out with just giving us an idea of what's happening right now in Damascus?
Well, it's a lot of, obviously, if you know, look at the rumor or noise going on in Damascus between the, some of the Syrian opposition and the regime and some of the shelling. But really, it's, we cannot confirm or deny what is really going on. But we know for sure there's some clashes. And frankly, I don't see any dangers of Assad being removed right away. So that's just a matter of the fight has been going on for a number of years, and nothing new that I see. Just more activities around the capital right now by a pre-Syrian army supported by Turkey and in the Gulf state.
Okay, because some of the reports that I've been seeing, which I cannot confirm, is that rebels were last night shelling with mortar shells the palace of Assad, and that the electricity, the power is out, that it is black at night in Damascus. So I just wanted to find out, have you heard anything about those specific things?
No, I have not that specific one, but we know there's shelling. We know that the issues of electricity, it is on and off in Damascus, but it is nothing that, it's more activities. Let's put it this way, more activities against the regime in Damascus than ever before. And I think we don't have any more firm information beside that.
Okay. I also understand that many of the embassies there have evacuated their people, and they are not there either. But let's go now and turn to the Kurds. I want to, if you can, just give us a very brief situation of what's happening there in the region and how the Kurds are involved.
What's happening in the region is the Kurds, in the region in general, we see Iran is basically controlling Syria. That's why we're saying what's happening in Damascus, not a major, because Iran has a full grip in Syria. The only some of the questioning going on about the Hezbollah, not visible as before, but Iran is in full control of Syrian regime and running the Syrian state, frankly. So that said, the Kurds in that region at the moment, YPG and PYD have cultivated some support from American, from Russian, from Assad regime, in this case Iran, and others, trying to preserve themselves, fight ISIS and radical Islamists, and many of the Syrian opposition, so-called the moderate, but frankly, they're better off than ISIS or equivalent to ISIS. So that's what's going on in that region. So the Kurds at the moment being supported by the Pentagon to take on Raqqa liberation. And at the same time, Turkey's moving its pre-Syrian army group against the Kurds and trying to attack the Kurds while ISIS also is attacking the Kurds. So the Kurds are in a good position right now with respect in getting support from the U.S. And unfortunately, Turkey is causing problems at the moment, and Iran's causing problems by forcing some of those Kurds to deny the Kurdish issue and more work to manage the Kurdish affairs in that region.
Okay, so I want you to explain to our listeners why Turkey is against the Kurds, why they're not helping you. Because is it because that they that the Kurds want to have their own state and Turkey sees that as a threat?
Precisely. Turkey has, well, they oppose anything that gives the freedom to the Kurds, having precedence in Iraq and doing the same in Syria, having a federal system in both countries. It could put pressure on them as well to basically do just that. They have no choice but to give federalism to the Kurds, because the Kurdish issue in Turkey needs to be resolved, and it's more than 30,000 to 40,000 people were killed as a result of the Kurds asking for their rights. So there is a major issue in Turkey. There's more than 30 million Kurds denied their rights, and Turkey trying to deny them. And any creation of a Kurdish state in Syria, or at least the federal system, it's the beginning of an independent Kurdistan composed of Iraq and Syrian Kurdistan. That gives them access to the sea, and that's what Turkey does not want. So Turkey is doing it just to prevent any creation. Otherwise, they would feel they would be undermining them, and they have to deal with the Kurdish issue in Turkey.
Right. So basically, even though the Kurds are fighting ISIS and Turkey wants to fight ISIS, Turkey is still fighting the Kurds.
I don't know if Turkey's fighting ISIS. Frankly, you know, Turkey did enter a number of cities and trying to keep the Kurdish region separate, fleeing from Kobani and penetrating into the north, middle of Syria right there. And it was, you know, overnight, basically, they captured the town without capturing anybody, killing anybody, wondering, there's no injured, there's no wounded, there's no, what happened to all these people? And immediately after that, a wave of new Free Syrian army with new uniforms and shaved beards entered Syria. So Turkey has a lot of explanation to do. I think Turkey could care less about ISIS. And this is the one thing that we're Obama and Turkey and many of the Gulf states, they created ISIS. And, of course, Iran as well. So ISIS is not a one homogeneous group. And many group of proxies in that region allowed this to happen. And I think it's about time for the international community to step in and eliminate this disease and get rid of it forever. But that means redrawing the boundaries of the Middle East. That means the Kurds doing the job right instead of relying on the same people that that they turned to become ISIS later on after training from U.S. and Turkey and support from Gulf states.
Now, there are Kurds all over the Middle East. There's in Turkey, Syria, I believe even in Iran, Iraq. What would the borders of this Kurdistan that you would like to make be?
Well, I would like to see, the largest Kurdish region, it is in Turkey. The second is in Iran. The third in Iraq and the fourth one in Syria. If the international community is not prepared for an independent Kurdish state, they could be at least prepared for independent Kurdish state from two failed states, Iraq and Syria. The Kurds could be the beacon of the democracy in that region. So composing a Kurdish state from Iraq, north of Iraq and north of Syria, I think this is the fair thing to the Kurds. But also that means the Kurds of Iran and Kurds of Turkey, their rights should be given to them in some fashion, a federal confederation. And frankly, to have all those joined as one united Kurdistan, this is the right thing to do and the moral things. And it's more than a century overdue. It's about time for that. And the Kurds, the only group in that region that is compatible for the value of democracy and human rights values around the world. And we're fighting on behalf of humanity against ISIS in that region.
So, I can just imagine if the Kurds should lose to the Islamic State, that there's going to be a lot of massacres happening there with heads chopped off, etc. So you had written something or spoken about some type of Kurdish-Israel United States alliance. Why don't you briefly tell me about that? We only have about another minute left. Go ahead.
I think we see that the Jews and Kurds are being threatened by a number of communities, well, a number of nations in that region, whether Turkey, New Ottoman, or Shia Crescent, or some Sunni Arab, pan-Arab nationalism. It's about time for the Kurds and Jews to get together and frankly, ask the U.S. administration to help them, their allies in that region. The only allies in that region are the Kurds and Jews, and frankly, they should fully embrace their allies and support them against the Shia Crescent or Sunni ISIS Islamic State and New Ottoman is emerging from Turkey. That's what we see the best solution for the international community and also allowing many other minorities in that region to rule themselves. By definition, that would be create more natural allies for America and the West, and that will help reduce the threat of international terrorists. In fact, in 2011, I said this, if the U.S. administration doesn't do anything in that region and support this, it would be more terror and more radicalism, that Hezbollah would be a piece of cake. In fact, that's what we see. ISIS and Hezbollah are controlling many areas of that region, and they're not even states. So this is the beginning, and unless we do something now, it's going to get even worse.
Dr. Abbas, where can people go to a website to follow you if they want to find out more what's going on in the Middle East here and how the Kurds are fighting, actually, for Western interests as well?
It's called kurdnas.org, K-U-R-D-N-A-S.org. That means Kurdistan National Assembly, abbreviation K-U-R-D-N-A-S.org.
Okay, very good. So we will link to that on our webpage as well. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Let's hope that the Western powers and the Kurds can work together in order to obliterate, as we say, the ISIS there and to bring a more peaceful region, and that the Kurdish people do deserve their own independent state. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right, when we get back, a live update from the AIPAC conference in Washington. Don't go anywhere.
I am Walter Bingham. For the past 12 years, I have each week brought you reports of life and events in Israel and the Jewish world and the news behind the news. The Walter Bingham File, new here on Israel News Talk Radio, will explain the truth to enable you to counter the myth that are spread by the world's media. So if you want to have the facts and without spin, then tune in to The Walter Bingham File every Sunday at 5 p.m. in Israel, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Back here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And we're going to be getting a live update from the AIPAC conference right now. Let me introduce our guest as we're getting him on the line. Let me just get my notes in front of me here. All right, so Rudy Rachman was born in France, and he grew up in Miami, Florida. At the age of 17, he volunteered and enlisted in the IDF paratroopers. By the way, my son was there and they were serving at the same time and they sort of know each other even, sort of. After the army, Rudy started traveling around the world and became a vocal Israeli activist. In 2016, he transferred to Columbia University and founded the Students Supporting Israel chapter. Columbia University, by the way, was recently ranked the most anti-Semitic, or as I like to say, anti-Jewish school in the United States. And today, Students Supporting Israel have grown to over 600 members. That's his group that he started, which is called Students Supporting Israel. Their activism has changed Columbia University and has inspired other campuses to actively strengthen Israel's story while empowering other minority groups. So with no further ado, let us invite on the show Rudy Rachman. Shalom, Rudy.
Shalom, how are you?
It's good to have you on. So you're there live now at the AIPAC convention. Can you tell us just some things there? Let's just start out with how many people are there approximately?
I think this year they're estimated at 18,000.
18,000, okay. And what can you tell us about what's happening there now at the AIPAC conference?
Well, AIPAC, I think their motto is many voices, one mission. So you have people coming from many different political, ethnic backgrounds, different religions, different cultures, and they come here to support Israel and to learn more about Israel's relations with Israel and other countries' relations with Israel.
But what about J Street?
What about them?
Well, I mean, you're saying that there's many voices all for the same thing, and J Street doesn't seem to be having the same, raison d'être, as they say.
Very true. So I go to Columbia University. I run the Student Supporting Israel there. We have a J Street on our campus. And the way we can describe or deconstruct J Street is that there's many different people within the group itself. And not every individual in that group is defined by the mission statement or the goal or the agenda of the larger organization. I heard someone once say that J Street is the only quote-unquote pro-Israel group that has never said or published anything pro-Israel. And it's kind of also true on our campus, where I feel that they may have genuine criticism of the state of Israel, but they do it in a very wrong way. Whereas it's not our job to speak to the entire campus or to talk to them about how we should criticize Israel. We should be able to criticize Israel and make it grow, but we should do that with Israelis. We should do that in Israel. We shouldn't do that to a campus that has no idea of what's going on actually in the country, especially on a campus that's already so anti-Israel. So I think it's a tact issue. Again, J Street is also a very left political movement. So anyone who's to the right is not welcomed in J Street. And I think that's also a problem for a pro-Israel group, whereas we should be accepting of both right-wing issues, left-wing issues. It doesn't really matter where you fall. If you're supportive of Israel, you should be part of a pro-Israel group.
Interesting. So after being at the conference, how are you going to bring this back now to your group at the Columbia University Students Supporting Israel? What are you going to do with the information that you have?
So this is actually my eighth APAC. I was going all throughout high school, went to the Army in Israel after high school, and then started at Columbia University. What we do with our student group is we don't push political agenda, so we don't say one state, two state, three state. We're not here to be divisive. We're not here to tell a democratic country what they should do. We're here to share Israel's story. And Israel's story is not only a story of technology and innovation and great things coming out of the country as accomplishments, but it's also a story of liberation. The story of a native people who came from a land who experienced persecution, attempted extermination, oppression, slavery, and eventually through Zionism in 1948, we liberated our indigenous homeland. And that's a story that's not really being told to the college campus. And so on the college campus, people don't really understand why does Israel have a right to exist. They keep being told by the Hasbara pro-Israel world that you should love Israel because of all its great accomplishments. But at the end of the day, as many great accomplishments as you have, it still doesn't give you legitimacy to be existent as a country. So I think it's important to talk about Israel's story. In fact, most of the time that I'm at APAC, I go less to the sessions and I go more outside to the protests to actually engage with people who have very critical and almost sometimes very anti-Israel views to, one, understand where they're coming from, understand what they're trying to say, in order for our message to be more refined and so people can understand what Israel has to say and how they can feel inclusive in Israeli states, or at least with the idea of an Israeli state.
Okay, so tell us, who were some of the keynote speakers there?
Oh, we had Bibi that was supposed to be live. I don't know if it was live or recorded. We had the former Prime Minister of Canada. We had Mike Pence. There were some pretty big speakers. Alan Dershowitz was here. These are the same speakers that come every year. They say great things. But, you know, in a speech, you don't really get to the content and the really pure ideas of what people believe. It's, you know, general to say something nice, to get a standing ovation. It's great to have in-person conversations with lots of these people.
Do you feel that the conference will accomplish anything?
I think, to me, the best thing that comes out from APAC, other than the support from the American government, which some people can be more critical to, is the fact that they engage so many student leaders from campuses. And not only Jewish, pro-Israel student leaders, but student leaders from other minority groups. So the black students, the gay students, the Hispanic students, Native American students. And they come to an APAC and they had no idea of Israel's story and also Israel's culture of today. So they have no idea of the amazing thing that Israel is doing within the country, whether it's through agriculture, irrigation, technology, startups, or even what it's doing in places like Africa, or what it's doing in places where there's natural disasters, like in Nepal and in the Philippines and in Haiti. And so I think people get a real exposure to Israel's story of the past and also what Israel is doing today. And that's very important, because try telling a student after he goes through an APAC conference that Israel is a colonial, bad state, monster, demonized country. It's impossible. They know the true faith and the true meaning of what Israel means to the entire world.
Hmm. And, you know, we all know that in every culture, there's right-wing leaning people, there are left-wing leaning people, liberals and more conservative. So knowing all of that, what was the feeling? Was there a sense of unity overall, or was there a real feel for a divide between the right and left?
Absolutely. I think with the last election, people were very polarized in terms of politics. Whereas they were no longer willing to hear out each other. People that were more liberal were demonizing conservatives, and conservatives demonizing liberals. And I think that's actually very dangerous. I think both sides have legitimate claims. I'm neither one or the other. I'm not an American citizen. But I have many views that connect with left ideology and many views that connect with right-wing ideology. And so we have to be able to communicate with each other. And at least at this conference, might have been different previous conferences, But there was no tension on political ideology. Everyone was here to support Israel's Right to Exist, to support Story, and to learn more about what they can do about helping Israel. So I think it was mainly on that side, and it was a great success as of now, I think.
Right. And it must be nice there also just to rub shoulders with so many Jewish activists. I know that one of our show hosts is there, David Ha'ivri, who hosts the show called A Hebrew in the Heartland here in Israel, which airs on Wednesdays. And in fact, he gave me your name to come on and give us a report. So who are some of the people that you've met there that you've been, you know, thrilled to meet?
Yeah, so I have a lot of friends that are, you know, I'm still in college. So I have many friends that are student leaders on different campuses. It's great to engage with them, to hear what they're going through on their campus, to exchange insights. For example, on our campus, when we have apartheid weeks, which is playing on real suffering of other people and riding on that suffering to pursue a political agenda destroying Israel, we launched our own movement, which is not about talking about peace and technology, but Hebrew liberation. We called it Hebrew Liberation Week. We're speaking about Israel's story, its narrative, culture, what does it mean to the Jewish people, why are we so connected to this specific piece of land, and how does that relate to histories and cultures of other minorities, like Yazidis, Kurds, Aboriginals, Tibetans, and we had an amazing success at Columbia University, and to be able to engage and tell people what we did on our campus with others, then they're able to do it as well. Obviously, I'm very close with Chloe Valdery, if you have heard of her. We spent a lot of time together. Other student activists, so people involved in the pro-Israel world, and we're able to, you know, engage with each other, learn from each other, share opinions, share experiences. And overall, I think one of the best things about APAC is the networking, where students and everyone, from politicians to businessmen to lawyers, to no matter what you do, you come here and supporting Israel, and you're able to meet everyone almost like once a year, general meeting to see how everyone's doing and to grow from one another.
And the most important question, we only have another minute left exactly, but this is the most important question. Did you see the video of Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I did not, unfortunately. I wasn't there this morning.
Okay, you have to go to my public Facebook page then and see the video that he played there for the APAC attendees, because the most important question I was going to ask you is, did Bibi dye his hair? Because in this video, he looks a lot younger. His hair is not white. It's a lot browner. It's pretty funny. I invite all of you to go to my public page on Facebook tomorrow, Yona, and go take a look at the video there that Bibi addressed the APAC conference, and tell me what you think. And maybe just ask some people around Rudy, ask some people that were there and saw the video, and ask them if they think that Bibi dyed his hair. I'd just be curious to know what other people think.
Either he dyed his hair darker or he just stopped dyeing it lighter.
Right. Okay. Very good. I want to thank you again so much for coming on. Rudy Rochman, he's a former IDF paratrooper, a real gibor, a real brave guy. A hero. Thank you for being a hero also on the campuses in the United States.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. And when we get back, we're going to find out about a new project by one of my favorite musicians in the whole wide world, Lenny Solomon. He's going to be coming on. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
Oh boy, I am clapping my hands together and rubbing them because I'm so excited. I'm going to be speaking now with my favorite Jewish musician, and his name is Lenny Solomon. He makes Judaism fun. He's the founder of Schlock Rock. It's a band that has recorded tens of albums with many parodies of famous songs that we all know, and then they take the lyrics and they change them to humorous Jewish-oriented lyrics. He's recently started a more serious project called the FourCornersProject.org, and it's spelled with a numeral four, FourCornersProject.org, which aims to spread Jewish education and unite Jews. So welcome to the show, Lenny Solomon.
Thanks, Tamara. It is such a pleasure to be on.
I wish that you did a talk show here because you are, you know, people don't know this, but you and I off the air will often talk about what's happening in the news, and we'll talk about Geula, which is the redemption. And we're looking to see if, you know, some of the things we're seeing in the news today have to do with the coming of the Messiah and the Messianic era. So we have a lot of good deep talks, and you're really terrific. But we're going to talk about Schlockrock at this moment because a lot of people don't know what they're missing. So tell everybody about your band.
Okay, so I am the king of schlock. For 35 years, I have done Jewish rock and roll. I've released 40 albums and performed 2,000 shows. I'm the only Jewish rock musician and band to perform in all 50 states of the U.S., England, South Africa, Australia, Canada, Mexico, and, of course, Israel, where I live. And, you know, we spread Jewish pride, identity, and awareness throughout the world and teach informally. It's you don't even know you're learning. That's the greatest thing about Schlockrock. It's been around since 1986, and it's just fantastic. It's been my career, and we are moving up with Schlockrock, and we're going to the Four Corners Project. And
okay, so tell everybody what that is.
So the Four Corners Project is a not-for-profit organization created for Jewish continuity, Jewish education, Jewish pride, Jewish identity, Jewish awareness, all informal learning, making projects using music and media to reach out to the four corners of the world, to all the Jews that are scattered to all over the world, and the non-Jews as well. It's going to be the greatest organization. It's already in place. It's already a legal 501c3, and I am, you know, very excited about it.
Okay, so I went to your website. Is it a brand new website? Because it looks so slick.
It is. It's fantastic. The two people that did it are amazing, amazing people. It's a brand new website around a month old.
Okay. And so you're going to be educating people through what? Through music? Through going out and giving concerts? Tell us
through
more.
Music and media. Through music, through media, going around the world, being a musical scholar in residence and speaking, performances, and so basically what we have is five projects this year that we're going to be doing. Two albums, one Schlockrock album of parodies, one original music album, six music videos to be spread out throughout the year, probably based around the Jewish holidays, three webisodes. A webisode is like a 3 to 8 minute YouTube TV episode, which imparts something to make you think, something where you can learn. And of course, the most important thing is curriculum. For the 495 Schlockrock songs already written, we're going to be hiring teachers to categorize them, to lesson plan them, curriculum them so that they can support all the learning in the classrooms. It's fantastic.
Okay, I know that you're working on, I mean, dare I say it? Am I allowed to say about
You're allowed to say
I can say about the Broadway play, yes?
Yes, it's okay. Not even a Broadway show, it's a movie.
Oh, I thought it's a Broadway show.
Yes, it is. A Broadway show will come out of it, but it's a movie. We're making a movie, Daniel in Babylon. 5 years ago, I wrote a musical on the Book of Daniel, and it's a rock opera, and 100 minutes, 30 songs, the first six chapters of Daniel. You will watch this, and you will go away from it saying, now you know everything about the first six chapters of Daniel.
I can't wait to watch it. When is it supposed to be, you know, how long are we waiting for this? How many years?
In May, it'll be 5 years since I wrote it, and we're hoping to start filming this September. Of course, it depends on certain things, you know, which are obvious. But I've put together a Hollywood staff that are fantastic, a director, choreographer, cinematographer, production designer, and musical director, creative producer, all ready to go, excited about the project. It is going to surpass La La Land.
So Brad Pitt's going to star in it, or what?
I can't tell you who's going to star in it because it's the director's job and the casting director to all do that. I'm the writer.
Right.
But I will tell you that there will be stars in it.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm waiting for that to come out. But why did I talk about this in the first place? Because I'm just thinking, with all the things on your plate, why, what is your motivation for now adding something else, which is this Four Corners project?
So think about it, Tamar. The secular world, it's overpowering. You go out there, you, every single kid on the internet, you can with one Google, you can go anywhere you want to. And sometimes that's not so good. You need something to balance it. You need the Jewish foundation, or else you're lost. You need the moral foundation, the ethical foundation, the education. You have to be strong. And that's why it's so important for the Four Corners Project. It's so important.
Okay, so I want you to give out your information for the Four Corners Project, because when I end this interview, I want to end it on one of your songs to give people a taste of what you do, all right? And I also want you to give out your Schlock Rock website as well, because I want people to be able to go there and get your albums as well. And I'm not, this is not a paid ad, everybody. I want you to know that when my kids were young kids, I would take Lenny's CDs from Schlock Rock and I would put them on and we would dance in the living room to it. And it was kosher music. It was clean. It was fun. And his lyrics were hysterical, because he take so many things from, you know, songs that we know so well, maybe written by the Police, or, you know, remember Every Breath You Take. So he would do, what was the title that you did?
Every Bite You Take.
Every Bite You Take has to be kosher.
Yes. Kosher Police.
You're right. The Kosher Police. Exactly. And it was just, it kind of like, you know what? If you liked Alan Sherman, if you liked Weird Al Yankovic, you are going to love Schlock Rock and Lenny Solomon. So, Lenny, give out your websites, and then I guess we'll go out with one of your songs.
You bet. Here we go. www.fourcornersproject.org. And the number four is the number. So it's www.fourcornersproject.org. You can email me at lenny@fourcornersproject.org, or you can go to Schlock Rock, www.schlockrock.com, schlockrock.com. And YouTube, there's millions of Schlock Rock. There's lots of Schlock Rock videos on YouTube as well.
Okay, so Lenny, I'm going to play a song now, or I'm going to have my technician play a song called Into the Sea.
Fertile. You got it.
And
Passover.
We're going to be
Passover's
on the air
right
with this.
Around the corner.
Right, so we want to be a little bit quiet while this plays, and when it's over, we'll have you back on and say goodbye. Go ahead.
It's called Into the Sea. World, it's a mess. Life in the desert is better than anything you've got here.
You see, we don't want to be here. There's so much that we can't take. Our people have been mistreated, and that was a big mistake. The world that you see around you, soon it will be no more. So now I have come to warn you, we want to go out the door. Into the sea, into the sea. Go through the sand and into the land of milk and honey. In Egypt they work us night and day, so in your land we cannot stay. We're letting you know our people must go now into the sea. Joseph came on down to Egypt, that is because he was sold. He saved all Egyptian people because of dreams he foretold. But now you forgot our people who saved you from famine's fate. Guess you just did not remember who put food right on your plate. Into the sea, into the sea. Though you may beat us, you cannot defeat us. Take it from me. Our sons you threw into a brook. Once past the sea, we off the hook. You take the Taurus, we'll do the Horus. Into the sea, into the sea,
into the sea.
Life will be sweeter, we will be freer from slavery. Say no to pyramids today. Let's go to the desert and let's pray. We'll break your spirit, you've got to fear it. Into the sea. The blood will be red, the fish will be dead. The frogs will be hopping all over your bed. The lice and then beasts, a pestilent feast. Let our people go. Boils hurt your skin, the hail won't be thin. The locust eat crops, the darkness is in. Your firstborn will die and Pharaoh you'll cry. Let our people go!
one jumps in, we won't have to swim. Just walk rapidly. Tell Miriam to lead the band. We're going to the Holy Land. Each little tribe, a path will divide here into the sea. When we get through here, we'll sing as Yashi.
All right, that was Into the Sea with Schlock Rock's Lenny Solomon. Lenny, one more time, your website's for everybody to go to, and they can order your CDs as well and check out the Four Corners Project.
www.fourcornersproject.org, the number 4cornersproject.org. Go to schlockrock.com, schlockrock.com. Go to YouTube. Everything is available, and it's the most fantastic Jewish educational experience. Jewish continuity, baby. That's the way to go.
Thank you, Lenny Solomon. And thank you all for listening to this show. I'll be back tomorrow.
Welcome to the new Beyond the Matrix, bringing you answers for life and faith with Ira Michelson and Rod Bryant. If you listen in, it's because you decided to unplug and join the real world.
You will not find anyone controlling things from behind the curtain here. No need to click your heels three times. Often imitated, never duplicated. We are Beyond the Matrix. Join us at our new time every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Israel time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.